Am I coming through on the microphone, Devin, or no? Because I don't hear myself at all. See what you did there? See what you did? Oh
yeah. Oh, freaking yeah.
Have you started recording yet?
Oh, yeah.
Sweet. Welcome to another edition of the Jedi and Germs on the Jazz Show, a weekly podcast brought to you by TorrentBySports.com. Local teams, local coverage, real fans. Find us again at TorrentBySports.com. I'm Alan, Jedi Zog, and he's John English, the Germs guy. John, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Fantastic. We want to talk a little jazz, as always. And... a heartbreaking jazz loss, too.
Let's talk about that last play.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of debate on Twitter as to whether or not Rudy should have guarded the inbound guy. What's your take on what happened in those last 1.7 seconds?
To be honest, I thought it went a little too quickly for me to really notice that. So, no, I didn't spend time breaking it down. But my thoughts are, Quinn made a decision, and I don't fault him for it. I don't think there was anything wrong with it. I might agree with what he said after the game. They interviewed him, and he said, you know what, I won't question or second-guess the play selection that we chose there on defense more than I would the execution of it. We didn't execute it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that you really can fault where Gobert was on the floor more than you can that the Jazz just poorly executed a defensive play there, and Rudy still almost got the block.
He did, but I agree with the side that says Rudy actually should have been closer to the inbound passer. I thought he gave him too much space. He should have been right on that guy.
Yep, and that's exactly what Quinn said after the game. He said Rudy really should have been much closer than he was. And the fault of that play really falls on Rudy and his positioning.
Did he really put it like that? Because I can't see him going, totally Rudy's fault. I wash my hands of it.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He talked about the execution and overall. He did speak of the fact, he did bring Rudy up and felt like Rudy probably could have positioned himself a little better. He felt like Rudy wasn't quite where he needed to be.
Well, and that's not just on Rudy. You know, me, this is the first time I've seen Rudy in that situation. And you've got to think maybe this should have been addressed with, you know, coaching earlier.
Right.
That's just my take on it.
Right. I mean, John, isn't that right? I mean, think about it. How often have the Jazz have this situation come up?
They've had a few close ones. I mean, I'd have to go back through, but this is one where, you know, you have 1.7 seconds left. I get the logic of having Rudy disrupt the pass, and you would think with a hard pass, that would be slow enough time to prevent them from getting off a good play. I actually kind of watched it over and over in slow motion to see when exactly they started the clock from when Zeller touched it to when they started the 1.7 seconds. Because I saw someone point out that's like, wow, they did all that in 1.7 seconds. Because he catches the ball and he gets down low and then he does a fake and then he's able to go up for the layup. It wasn't suspiciously off. You know, they could have started at 3 or 4 tenths of a second sooner, but can't really grouse on that. But the Celtics ran a really good play. They ran too easy a play. And that's why I really wish Rudy had been closer to the guy. He shouldn't have been able to get that lob in the way he did. And even after he got the lob in, Hood was behind him. Hayward jumped on the pump fake. And then he just had the presence of mind to get it out of his hand in time before the buzzer went off.
How close was that from his hand to the buzzer?
2/10 of a second.
Wow.
Looked like when it stopped.
Okay. Because my daughter, my 12-year-old, jumped on that awfully quickly because she thought she didn't think he had got it off in time, and she thought it was awfully close. So,
yeah, it was, but he got it off in time. If anything, I thought that they didn't start the clock in time, but by, you know, so many tenths of a second. So I can't really grouse. The Celtics led most of the game. The Jazz had a good defensive night overall.
Yeah.
But their offense wasn't there for them. They were 3 of 19 from 3. They missed 8 free throws. They had 13 or 14 turnovers, and the Celtics only had 3. I mean, the Jazz are usually better than that. And to have the team only have 3 turnovers really says something about Boston's offense.
Well, and what's more than that is the Jazz's 13 turnovers turned into 14 points for Boston, too. That was the telling number. Boston had 3 turnovers, 0 points off of those turnovers for the Jazz, whereas the reverse is the Jazz had 13 turnovers turning into 14 points for Boston.
Yeah.
I found it interesting, Gordon's comments after the game, too, which goes right along with what you just said. I don't know if you caught his post game on TV, but Bowler asked him about it, said, you know, what about that last play? And I find it interesting after Gordon talked about the play that he immediately said, you know what, shouldn't have come to that. He said, we should have been better. I mean, he didn't go into any details, but I think what he was getting at is the Jazz should have been much better early on in the game. And so it shouldn't have come down to that last possession. Shouldn't have even been that close.
Yeah, I mean, they're relatively healthy at this point. We knew Alec Burks was out for the year, but they have their set rotation now for the rest of the year. Rodney Hood's back. Elijah's been great on defense, kind of hit or miss on offense. So this is the squad that's going to be finishing the season together, and they need to, you know, they need to figure out a way to win these close games. Not only win these close games, but when they're going up against a team that they're better than, they need to not play down to that level. They need to play as if every person they're going against is a playoff team. They're beating all the playoff teams. They're losing to the lottery teams.
Yeah. No, it's true. And yet their struggles aren't defensively. They're not having lapses on the defensive end. It's offensively.
No, they held Boston to 85 points. That's great. But they only scored 84, so they lose.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to see, and the Jazz retweeted this, did you see the quote of Brad Stevens after the game?
The number one thing he took away was how good a defense team they are, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, again, that states a lot, the fact that the Jazz are there defensively. They're very there. The problem is they're struggling to put points on the board, and I don't know. Where's that problem at, John? Who is that with right now?
I start with Dante. He's our starting point guard, and he's a great defender already. I think if you just looked at all the starting point guards, you'd put him at least in the top half as far as defenders go. But he almost feels done for the year as far as any offensive progression. He doesn't drive to the basket that much. He's very careful about what shots he's going to take. There are a lot of times where he has a smaller guard on him who's slower than him, and yet he still won't challenge them. And so I think, and I hope to see some improvement on this through the rest of the year. But he seems to have hit the rookie wall offensively, and I really wish. I hope I see improvement in these last, you know, 5-6 weeks of the season. That, I mean, what was he? He was 1 for 4 from the field. He had 3 points. He had 1 assist in 18 or so minutes. And, you know, we all knew he would be a project, but I would hope he'd taken it on upon himself to be better than that. And especially when he's taking on a young team like this. I mean, he was mostly against Marcus Smart, who isn't that great an offensive player either. But, you know, it felt like Smart was able to get in Dante's head. And there's going to be some natural rivalry between them because of the draft. But it seems like no matter who Dante goes against, there's this tentative aspect to his game.
He's a bit timid.
Yeah.
No, and I agree. My thoughts on that is, it you know, we expected that, though. With the benching of Trey Burke, putting Trey in a position to be successful off the bench, we expected Dante to really not be much of a contributor offensively. And maybe we expect him to get a little better. I wonder how long this lasts before Quinn decides to put Trey back into the starting lineup. But see, I'll go away from that slightly, because I think that right now the Jazz miss Alec Burks probably more than anything at this point, because Alec Burks gave you that second go-to scorer when Hayward wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, I think no matter what, Dante's starting the rest of the year and Trey's coming off the bench the rest of the year, because it is actually better for Dante to struggle in the starting lineup than coming off the bench, because the starting lineup has other guys who can make up for what's going on offense.
Right.
When Dante is out there, you know, and we've talked about this before, it's better for Gordon when Dante's the point guard. And it's better for the entire bench unit when Trey's the one coming off the bench.
Right.
I mean, Dante, he's had a positive impact in the game. You look at his plus minus, and I mean, it's never that bad. He was a minus three tonight, and he hasn't had that bad a plus minus since the Portland game on February 3rd. Oh, sorry, I misread that. The Memphis game, he was minus 15. But, you know, the last few games, he was plus 27 against Memphis, just barely. He's plus 4 against Milwaukee, plus 12 against Denver, plus 5 against the Lakers. He was minus 2 against the Spurs, which is kind of understandable. He's plus 5 against Portland. He was even in that Dallas loss. You know, and these are all of those are pretty good signs. It doesn't hurt the team when Dante's out there.
Right.
But I feel like there is more that he could be doing as far as the offense goes. And I mean, the real killer for me, the damning piece of evidence against Dante right now, is he has not shot a free throw since January 10th.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Well, and like you said, he's not going to the hoop. I mean, and
no,
it doesn't take anyone with major basketball knowledge to see that. He just is not going to the hoop and not being aggressive. And you can go back and look at his days in Australia back in his high school days, and he would attack. And he doesn't have that, is it a killer instinct? I don't even know if we're talking about that yet in a young kid like this, but the attack mentality that he had when he was in high school.
Well, he's had 29 free throws the entire season, and free throw attempts, and he's made 18. And that just tells me something about his aggressiveness.
Right.
What I imagine will happen is that he's going to go to summer league. He's going to be ready to go in his second year. He's going to be ready to make a leap. Rudy made a big leap. He'll be confident that he's going to be one of the better players on the floor at all times. Whereas right now, I think this 19-year-old is going on the floor and he feels like he's the 9th or 10th best player on the court at any given time. And so I hope that a lot of work is going to go in this summer. So, you know, I understand all the shortcomings he's going to have his rookie year. We all expected it. But I'd still like to see signs that he's, you know, working on these things. I really hope that Who's their next game against?
Brooklyn? Brooklyn. Yeah. No.
Philadelphia on Friday.
Is it Philadelphia and then Brooklyn?
Ugly game Friday, then Brooklyn.
Let's go to the schedule.
wait, ugly game. That's what we've been playing lately.
Yeah, okay. So they got the Sixers and then they got the Knicks. So the Sixers, who did they wind up with point guard? Who did they?
Knight didn't go there. No, Knight ended up in Phoenix. Knight ended up in Phoenix.
Oh, Milwaukee they got Isaiah Cannon.
Is that all?
I guess Isaiah Cannon's their starter.
Okay. Dante, this is your game.
Yeah, okay. So he's got Isaiah Cannon, a 6 foot nothing point guard. And his backup is Ish Smith, who's also 6 feet even. I want to see Dante attempt a free throw. I want to see him drive to the basket. I want to see him get in there. I mean, that's going to be an ugly game because it looks like... even of the very thin bench that they have, they're not going to have a few of their key players. That's going to be a fascinating game. They should really just destroy Philadelphia.
Yes.
They should circle that and tell themselves, we're not going to play down. We're going to go out there and own them like we should, like they did against Denver.
And just so everybody knows that's listening, Jedi and Germs are not the jinx with this. So John says they should win. Don't come back to us and say, well, you said they should win. Because they should win that. It's Philly. They're horrible.
Yeah. They should win that. The Nets.
It's back-to-back, isn't it?
It is back-to-back. No. It's not back-to-back. They have Philly on Friday. They have the Nets on Sunday.
Oh, that's right. 4 o'clock Sunday.
They are both road games. We're on a four-game road trip here. We're 1-1 so far. But Brooklyn has been, you know, they've been up and down. They have the 8 seed, and then they lose it, and then they get it back the next day, and they're just kind of bouncing around as far as do they really want to make the playoffs. I mean, their coach is trying to keep them in there, even though they, you know, it's like, I don't even know what the motive is in Brooklyn right now.
Well, aside from an owner who is selling the team, right?
The owner comes in, they trade away all their assets. The veterans they bring in, it doesn't work out.
Right.
And now, I mean, I'm pretty sure they don't even have their pick this year, so it doesn't matter if they make the playoffs or not.
And now he's trying to move on.
Oh, this is, if I remember right, this is the year that Atlanta has the right to swap picks with them.
Oh.
That's what it was. So they know no matter how good or bad they are, they're going to get Atlanta's pick, which is going to be like the 28th or 29th pick.
So full-on tank mode for Philly.
For Philly? Yeah, Philly's in second place right now.
Which is unfortunate because, man, at the beginning of the season, many of us were looking at, I mean, let's go back to our show that we talked about before the Jazz played them in December when we talked about how ugly a game it was going to be. You couldn't talk enough about their defensive prowess and how they were a promising team. And then they turn around and trade everybody. I mean, this team has fallen from the graces of rebuild mode. I don't even know if, I think they're in no man's land, Cleveland type no man's land.
Yeah, they looked long enough at Michael Carter Williams, I guess, to decide that he's not a long-term solution to anything. And KJ McDaniels, he was going to be unrestricted, and they figured he was going to get a big raise based on his play. So they got Isaiah Cannon in a. Cannon or Cannon? It's spelled like Cannon.
Yeah.
And a second-round pick for KJ, and then KJ can't even get on the floor in Houston. So that looks great for looks great for Philly that way. But they have so many picks this summer that I have to imagine that they're going to package some of those for real players. This is like their last year to really stink, and now it's time for them to have Joel Embiid join them and try to win. And they have enough picks from other teams that they don't need to be bad themselves. I would think. I mean, who knows what's really going through their heads now, but
don't be so sure. I don't know that anything's going through their heads. Last I heard, they were talking about doing a draft day trade and even throwing Embiid on the table when he hasn't even suited up for him yet. So, you know,
I saw that they were open to trading Embiid.
So just, there's no plan
in place.
If you trade
Embiid, then you're worse than the 90s Clippers.
Well, and this, okay, Dan Gilbert, don't get me started on in Cleveland. I mean, their only saving grace is that they got LeBron back. But you even go to Minnesota for however many years that they drafted, what, 5 point guards over a 2-year span there in Minnesota. It's like, what are some of these GMs thinking? I mean, where are these guys' heads at? That's what I don't get. You know, I mean, you're going to let a team like Philly just bottom dwell for, you know, they're going to be scraping off the bottom of the garbage can forever.
Well, there are a couple teams that are jealous of what Philadelphia is doing.
Please enlighten me on who.
I at this point, Brooklyn's probably jealous.
Probably.
Brooklyn would love to trade every single person on their roster for a pick.
Yeah.
Every single one. Just start all over. But they can't start over for another 2 or 3 years. They're just stuck. They have no picks, and they have long contracts, and they're just screwed.
They can't afford it. There's no way they can afford any of that. Brooklyn, yeah, no. I'm with you there. That makes sense.
Well, see, Philly, I mean, I follow a couple of Philly fans, and they'll pipe in every once in a while. And they were fine with the tanking last year, and they get what's going on this year. But after that trade deadline trade, now they're just like, we're just going to be in here forever, aren't we? We're just going to be this 15-win team indefinitely. And, you know, the GM knows he has the full support of the owner to just do this forever. So I look for Philly to make some kind of move this summer that shows they do plan on winning someday. I don't know how much faith I have in them making that move, but I would think that the other 29 owners are saying to Philly, you better do something to show that you care.
No, I agree. I'm just laughing. I'm laughing at your words someday. But yes, that's enough depressing talk about Philly.
Here's the thing. Let's bring this full circle back to the Jazz. This has to make Jazz fans feel a little bit better to see the team succeeding after trading Cantor away for what many saw as nothing. And then comparing this to, let's say, what Brooklyn did a couple years ago in bringing in Pierce, bringing in Garnett, bringing in Williams, and thinking they were building a contender. And then you look at what it is now. Jazz fans have to feel pretty good with what they have, right?
Yeah. Billy King of the Nets is Jazz fans' best friend. We're just going to say that because we had Enes Kanter because of it. We had Derek Favors because of it. Yes, Billy King is Utah Jazz fans' best friend. Period.
Yeah, Jazz are in really good shape. That Darren Williams trade, I still say the Jazz won. I mean, especially if you just assume that all of the Darren's injuries would have happened in Utah the same as they've happened in Brooklyn, then Jazz would have just kind of floated in mediocrity and we wouldn't have had half those picks. And
yep.
Yeah, they're in a really good position right now. They've been doing everything right. They've been following the Oklahoma City model. And, you know, I mean, right now they'd be ninth in the lottery. I still think that they're going to wind up being 11th or 12th by the end of the season. But the improvement and progress they've made is worth dropping a couple notches in the lottery, I say.
Well, and I was of the opinion if the Jazz were to win against against Boston tonight, I started getting some thoughts in my brain, and I think I was going above reality for a little while, thinking maybe the Jazz could roll off 6 or 7 in a row, and before you know it, maybe the Jazz win more than 37 games. They push it to the 38-39 spot by the end of the season, almost to 500 ball. I mean, wasn't out of the realm of possibility, but tonight put it back just a little bit closer to reality for me.
Yeah, they're still, I think they'll still win. 37 games still sounds good.
Yeah.
It still sounds like about where they're going to wind up. I mean, after our two road games, then there's this 5-game home stance. And then there's two road and another two home. So
they're April, though. That last 2 weeks of April's brutal.
It is, but the Jazz are pretty good against playoff teams, so who really knows?
That's true. You're not off base there, no. The only playoff teams we're not good at is Houston and Dallas, and I think we still got to play each of them one more time, don't we? I think.
Yeah, Houston's in this home stretch coming up next week.
So, and that's two teams that I want a chance at again, you know, just for an opportunity to see the defense play a little better this time around. So,
well, Dwight, I mean, I don't think Dwight will be back by then.
Probably not.
So, you know.
But you still got
Harden's going to be carrying it, but we have some better wing defenders than when last we played Harden.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
So I think that'll be a good game. I view every game from here on out as winnable just because they've surprised me lately with some of the teams they've been able to beat. So I say every game is winnable. They'll still probably end up with a 37-45 record. And that means they would finish 13-9.
Which is a good mark to finish.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
The way they've been playing.
All right. What else you want to talk about?
Well, we're further away from getting rid of Cantor. And I still feel better about it as more time goes by.
Right.
Without even looking at what Cantor's doing, because I understand that he's playing with more energy and more excitement and trying harder on the Thunder than he was here. But it's really shown to be best for both parties. So
agreed.
I'm fine with it.
Kind of works.
And Rudy's getting national attention left and right now.
Yep.
And he still is probably on course to. He has to be in talk for most improved player.
Yep. Did you read that Grantland article earlier today?
Yes.
Fantastic piece.
Magnifique.
Yeah. Really enjoyed what the breakdown, especially at the very end when he talked about the numbers that we're seeing from opposing bigs over the last few games the Jazz have played. The opposing bigs, you know, he kind of broke it down shot for shot. And you know what? And that's the other thing about this is you're right. Gobert's getting better. Favors defensively is showing improvement as well. And it's funny, Favors, when he was first in the league, when we first got him on the Jazz, was what we would consider to be, at the time, an elite defender. And he had a drop-off. Last year was a bit of a drop-off for him. But seeing him next to Gobert now, you see him have... he's getting better. And the one thing I like about him, too, is he seems to have a little bit more of a fire about him when he's playing now than I've seen in the last year or so.
Yeah, I was just, let's see, how many games is this? Oh, this is for the whole year. Let me narrow this down. I was going to just do some numbers on how the Jazz are doing lately. So let's go to, well, let's just do February because we're the number one defense from February on. And I think we still are because they only scored 85.
Oh, and by the way, as the year on a whole, the Jazz are the number two team in points allowed in the West, right behind Memphis. So you're going over February, but
well, there you go.
But in the West alone, points per game, I think they said that Memphis is allowing 94 or something like that, and the Jazz are allowing 96. I can't remember the last numbers I looked at, but so anyway, go back to what you were saying. You were talking about over the course of the month of February.
Yeah, from February 1st on, we're actually seeing a dip in some of these offensive numbers, which makes sense. Gordon Hayward's three-point shooting is down to 33%.
Ouch.
In fact, the only one shooting well from three is Rodney Hood. Rodney's been shooting 52.6% from three since he's been back.
Where's Trey at? I thought Trey's numbers have bumped up.
They're at 31.7. He's had a few games. I mean, he missed all of his three attempts tonight, and he missed them all in the game before, too. So I think he's missed his last, like, 9 3-point shots. Yeah, he had been getting better, but they're going back down. But, you know, Joe's at 34%. Dante's at 26. Millsap's at 22. Booker's at 22. Rodney's the only one who can consistently hit threes at this point.
Well, there's your answer to the scoring predicament right now.
Yeah.
We have a team that just can't make shots.
Our 3-point shooting's back down.
Exactly.
And is our, let's see, our field goal percentage overall, Dante's at 24.6.
Ouch.
Millsap's at 28.6. You know, you want these guys to do better than that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, you know, Favors is 55, Gobert's 58.
But that's again, where the problem's going to come, especially when you play against teams like Memphis and tonight against Boston. Defensively, those teams are going to pack it down in the paint and are going to make you shoot. And the Jazz can't make it outside.
And you know what's been remarkable in this stand, in this number one defensive stand, who do you think has the best and worst plus minus on the team?
I know I heard this the other day. Somebody had a crazy plus minus, and I don't remember who it was.
Derek Favors has the best.
Okay.
And Rudy Gobert has the worst.
Ha-ha.
Isn't that weird?
That's very weird. That's very weird. Well, you know, here's the other thing that's weird. David Locke posted the other day and talked about how the Jazz's defensive prowess has, and the numbers have reversed. You know, Rudy Gobert was the best, one of the best defender, if not the best defender at the rim in the NBA. But now the Jazz are one of the best three-point shooting defensive teams in the league. Instead of it being in the paint, teams are getting, and I don't remember who he quoted in saying this, but teams are getting scoring in the paint more than they are in the three-point line because the Jazz are running out to the three-point line. And one guy that I got to give credit to on that is Trey. Trey has been going and attacking that three-point line a lot more on the defensive end. But that was the one thing he noticed. So there's another weird stat for you. The Jazz have the length at the rim, but seem to be giving up more inside than they are outside.
That doesn't sound right.
I know it didn't sound right when he tweeted it, but do you remember when he said that? I don't know if you noticed it, and I don't know if I could even find it. But he tweeted out some numbers. Maybe I'm just spouting off stuff.
Well, I was looking at this lately. Okay, so for less than 5 feet in defense, Jazz are 10th best since February 1st at less than 5 feet.
Okay.
And at the three, they are 22nd. So they're still not, you know, they're not the worst perimeter defensive team like they used to be. But that's still kind of down there.
Well, here's one of the numbers I found. Earlier today he posted, post All-Star break, the Jazz opponents are 39% from the floor, but their three-point percentage is 24%.
Oh, well, if we're going post All-Star break, that's
and I think that's where I was
sample,
going.
But
yeah, he is going small
pull
sample.
This up. Okay, so post All-Star break. Yeah, let's see. They are 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 14, 15, 15th at less than 5 feet. They are the 8th at the 5 to 9 range. Okay, now let's go to the 3. Yeah, there are 12th at defending the 3.
Hmm.
It's kind of a small number. I don't really know what to do with that.
Yeah, well, and that's the hard part. And Locke's been throwing out a lot of small sample sizes over the last, and he really has going, you know, he's been giddy about this stuff, and I kind of like that he posts it out because it's kind of interesting to read, truthfully.
Oh, yeah, I love all the numbers he throws out, and I listen to pretty much every tip-off. And then there's been some cool new stuff from Synergy that I haven't had a chance to look at yet that everyone's been getting excited about. So when I think we're going to have a lot to chew over on our since the All-Star break, since the trade deadline stats when we get to the end of the season, where they can really look at everything that's been going on and how the development's been going. What do we really need? I heard a lot of talk today about targeting Wesley Matthews in free agency this summer.
How do you feel about that?
I think I like it. He's a solid scorer, solid outside shooter, former Jazz man, so he's familiar with everything. He's going to command a lot of money. But you do that, it makes me wonder what happens to Alec and Rodney.
And that's one of my biggest arguments against that move. You just invested huge amounts of money in Alec Burks. And you've heard the Jazz, since he's gone down with an injury, you've heard Quinn Snyder talk about it. You've heard Dennis Lindsay talk about the fact that they fully expect Alec to come back next year and be, you know, in fact, one of them said, can you imagine how crazy good this team's going to be with Alec Burks back in the lineup? You're investing your time, the management, the money, everything in Alec Burks, only to bring in Wes Matthews and start him instead? I don't buy it. You know what I mean? I don't buy that.
Well, they need some talent upgrade, but any position you upgrade your talent, you got to ask what happened to the talent that's already there. Like, you know, there's a part of me that would like to see a veteran backup point guard, but I don't necessarily want Trey traded away either, so maybe we just stick with the two of them for another year and watch them both progress and see how that goes.
Right.
So then you go to shooting guard. Shooting guard, I think, is one where you can get an upgrade quickly because we don't have anyone who's that great from outside. We need someone who can shoot from the outside.
Right.
And the shooting guard position traditionally creates the best outside shooters. And so, yeah, Wesley Matthews seems like a natural, even though we've already invested $40 million in Alec Burks.
Right.
Alec isn't known for being a great outside shooter. He's more of a slasher guy, create your own shot type guy. So, you know, when I look at the five positions as a whole, it seems like shooting guard is the one where you would expect him the easiest place to go find some talent that you can plug in there. And, you know, then Alec would have to fight for his position again, fight for the starting job again. And, you know, I could see them, you know, I don't know. I think that's the position where, I mean, okay, let's say they don't get a free agent pick, but when you look at the 9th, 10th, 11th areas in the draft,
right?
That's when you have some decent wingmen showing up once all the big guys are gone. Let's see, let me close this. I had a thing up the other day of I was looking at the draft. I don't know, I'm trying to remember who was there.
Yeah, when it comes to the draft, I don't keep up on that, so this is all you.
Well, I actually pay more attention to that once March Madness actually starts.
Right.
But I just been kind of keeping a running list of the averages of a few sites. And I would put them up in Tank Watch. There are actually a lot of long guys that are at the top. I mean, D'Angelo Russell's the obvious wing. You know, 9th, 10th area, you'd probably have Kelly Oubre from Kansas. He's going to be right around there. Justice Winslow from Duke. Those guys are shooting guard, small forward type players.
Well, and that's, you know, I don't know. I'll be interested to see what they do with the draft this year, because I don't know that my thought on the Jazz, realistically, both free agency and the draft, is I think they'll try and find some pieces to make them better. But I honestly think that they believe that, and this is coming from Quinn Snyder and from Dennis Lindsay, I think that they believe that they have the talent they need, that they can develop at the positions they already have, that really they just need to find some guys to lift them in certain areas, not necessarily be, you know, that's why I don't know. That's what my thoughts are on Wes Matthews, why I don't think he's going to be something the Jazz will go after. Simply because I just think that it doesn't fit the MO of what they're trying to do right now, and that is develop the talent that they have. And if they feel like the talent pool they have is something that can get better, I don't see them disrupting that by bringing in better talent at those positions.
And that just kind of brings me back to my feeling that on draft night is when I could see them making a move, where I could see them taking their pick and the Thunder pick and maybe a player or two on the roster and moving out for some upgrades.
No, and I totally agree with that. I absolutely think that that's what will probably end up happening. So, but all right, after I've searched Locke's timeline since we've talked, I couldn't find the tweet I was talking about. So Alan was just speaking madness tonight. We'll just leave it at that. I'm mad.
Okay.
Don't shake your head at me, Devin. Both of you, quit agreeing with me. Any other thoughts going forward?
No, I'm enjoying the season. Looking forward to the next few games. I mean, that's my overall thing with this team is I'm just really excited. I'm excited for our coach and for where he can take this team. I'm excited for the development I am seeing in these players. You know, it'd be nice to do our next one right after a win so we can talk about that more.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've covered a lot. I had other questions I could ask you, but I don't want to keep you longer than necessary. And heaven forbid I keep our producer up past the midnight hour. Oh, wait, he's always up that late anyway.
I'm past curfew, so I'm already going to be in trouble.
You're past the bewitching hour. Because I heard some interesting things on the way. I was going to I'm interested in you guys' thoughts on the MVP race, but we'll have to talk about that another time because we've been talking for a bit tonight. So, all right. Any what's that?
Steph Curry's still in first place for me.
Yeah. Interesting to hear on the radio on the way that the subject of Russell Westbrook came up and that he's in the
top. Yeah, I see him coming on strong.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll feel different in April, but.
Well, and they just pointed out the first time since 1988-89 that a player has recorded a triple-double in, was it 3 or 4 straight games that Westbrook's been doing it now? Last person to do it?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan.
Yep.
So
I saw that somewhere, and if I remember right, it was Magic, MJ, Kareem, and Oscar Robertson are the only other guys who've done it.
Insane company. I'm not a big Westbrook fan, but that's just insane company. And what he's doing without Durant is, you know, very good. Very good for them right now, especially if they make the playoffs and then Durant comes back.
Oh, they're making the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's there's no doubt in my mind.
That's a dangerous team come playoff time, a very dangerous team. So,
okay. The only doubt in my mind is if Westbrook goes down again.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the only way I can see them missing. And I know they're only like a game and a half above Pelicans, but Thunder is just too good right now.
If you jinx him, we are going to have Thunder fans absolutely hating us.
Do we have any Thunder fans that follow us?
I don't really care.
I don't think we have any Thunder fans that follow us.
You know
what
my number two team was? It was the Seattle Sonics. So,
oh,
I don't really care about quote unquote Thunder fans.
Emphasis on the quote, right? All right.
They're a franchise to envy. I just wish it was all still going on in Seattle.
Oh, couldn't agree more.
All right.
All right, let's call it
11 our time. People will be listening to this tomorrow, but.
Yes, but it is bedtime. It's bedtime. All right. Yep. Well, that wraps it up for yet another edition of the Jedi and Germs show. And thank you. We'd like to thank you all for joining us. You can find us on Twitter at Jedi and Germs, at Jedi Zog, at John English, or excuse me, sorry, no. At Germs Guy. Sorry, I was going to give you a new Twitter name. And also, we'd like to thank our producer, Devin, Torn by Devin on Twitter, for always hanging with us, putting up with us. The last couple of weeks, he's had to do a few extra tweaks to make the podcast available to all of you. So yes, this is a big thank you to the mastermind behind this wonderful project. So, and thank you all for listening. John, we'll let you take us out tonight.
Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Nice.